Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm. Being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real.
Thanks to Laura Fox, it's Thursday the 3rd of February and this is Game On. Coming up today, is Roy Keane on the way back to Sunderland?
I'd spoke to groups of players before as a captain, but not as a manager. Unfortunately, it didn't really affect the players. It goes to show important team talks are, because I don't think anybody was listening anyway. And we managed to win the game 2-1. So, again, good memories of Sunderland. Really good club. And again, pity that ended the way it did in terms of me falling out with the... not having a big disagreement with the owner. But, yeah, good days of Sunderland. Really good club.
David Snaid is in studio with more on that. Plus, we've Brighton coach Gary Dicker on life at one of the Premier League's brightest academies. Meanwhile, in rugby, we've another chance to win our Six Nations trip to Paris, thanks to Aldi. And we've Bernard Jackman in studio to dissect Andy Farrell's Irish side to face Wales.
Yeah, the balance is good. More than anything, they were pushing each other hard, you know, day in, day out to get ready to get to a point where we know we're going to improve. So all in all, it was a great camp and a great build up for what's going to be an exciting start.
In Gaelic football, Neil Ewing will set us up for the weekend's Allianz League action, including Dublin's trip to Tralee to face Kerry. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. David Snaid is with me in studio, as is Bernard Jackman. And lads, there is only one place to start, and that is with Roy Keane potentially returning to Sunderland as manager. News has broken over the last 24 hours that he's been interviewed by the club, as are a few other big names. But when it comes to Roy Keane and Sunderland, it really is hard not to focus on him, his association with the club, his desire to return to management. And you'd have to think, David, that this is his shot at it.
I know, yeah. Just sums up Roy Keane, that even the first thing Bernard does, he's bounced in the studio, the first thing he wants to know about Roy Keane, you know. That's the allure he has, that's the draw that he is and so many people are used to. Just over the last few hours when this became clear, like just when you're going to get used to Roy Keane on Sky Sports and in those YouTube videos and Micah Richards, and you kind of almost becoming a bit of a parody himself a little bit, it's kind of maybe that little bit of a reminder that he has got that drive in him maybe to get back involved in the game. And like you hear that clip there talking so fondly about Sunderland, and you kind of wonder, is that, like, it can only be that little bit of an emotional connection or a little bit of a feeling of what if I had to stay, that would draw him back in there. Because if you look on the face of it, like, why would Roy Keane want to go to League One? Why would he want to go to the third tier of English football? You've got a chance maybe to obviously get a club like Sunderland back into the Championship, but then you'll be straight back into the mire. It does seem that it could just be a short-term fix to try and get them up, because if you look at the reports actually in the local media and what that club are needing, it seems to be a club who, under their previous manager Lee Johnson, had gotten into a bit of a comfort zone, hadn't really won a 5 games, got absolutely battered at the weekend by Bolton 6-0, and then it seems as if they're looking for a short shark shock. That's what the reports seem to be, and who better man than Roy Keane to do that. And it's like, and it just captures the imagination a little bit. It's because, like, you look at that documentary on Netflix or something, you'd probably imagine the owners would be asking for a few more quid if he is involved, like, kind of, for that next series. But on the serious element with Keane, you're kind of thinking, well, if he's weighing this up, what are the pros and cons to it? What are the reasons for wanting to get back in? And I definitely think there could be that element of having that desire to go back there because of what he did do before. And as he touched on there, it was in that clip about how he fell out with Ellis Short, because people kind of forget the kind of job he did at Sunderland when he took over there. So long ago now, it's over a decade ago when he was actually a manager with Ipswich. But like, going in at a time when they were bottom of the Championship, obviously Niall Quinn had taken charge, they had no manager, they were beginning to pump a bit of money into the club through that Irish consortium, but they were going nowhere. They were literally heading to League One, and he dragged them up, got them promoted as champions. But then, even more impressively, which seems to have been whitewashed when you think of everything that's gone on, he kept them up. Like, so many managers are able to get a club up grand with a few bob behind them and can inspire them, but not many will be able to keep a club up. And he did that in his first season with Sunderland in the Premier League. And then it was only when, because of almost a victim of that success of bringing that club back to that level and maybe stabilising them a little bit, where you had Ellis Short, obviously an American capitalist, coming in and taking advantage, getting hold of the club. And then bit by bit, things unravelled. He had that falling out, Keane left, And then it's just started to slow. The Moyes of Sunderland over the last few years, captured amazingly in that documentary about them on Netflix. And now comes full circle, and it would just be an absolutely incredible story if he was to take it on, and it would be captivating. And just even like so many different little tangents and like storylines with it, like, but like Dave Jones, the presenter of Sky Sports, who's like a non-executive director on Sunderland, there's just so many links here. It's just absolutely set up for him to take it if he decides to do it. And that's what it seems to be. It seems to be the case that the owners there want him. We're going to interview him today. That seems to be the reports that are coming out, along with a couple of others. But he is the man, and if they can convince him, which what seems to be, to take it on, it could just be an amazing story.
Yeah, there'll be lots of adults now trying to resurrect those Sunderland jerseys that they bought years ago when that consortium took over. But Bernard, just purely from a practical point of view, so there's nobody beating down his door really in the Premier League trying to get him to come in that we know of anyway. He hasn't hidden his desire to return to management. He seems to, especially of late, at every opportunity, be very keen to inform people that he's changed and that he's softened and that his approach to other people and his standards as well, which we know were an issue when other people didn't live up to them, that seems to have changed a little bit, that he's not maybe as dogmatic as he was before. He understands now there's a different type of player coming through, a different generation of young people as well. We know that as well. They live on social media. You know, they need the man management. He's embraced social media himself, something that I don't think anybody thought he would do. We weren't expecting him to be so prolific in punditry as well. That was something that he wasn't always set on doing, but he has taken to it. And he's box office when it comes to that. So he's made allowances in his personality when it suited him and when he wanted to succeed at something and when he wanted to stay relevant, like the Instagram thing. Do you think that he can go into Sunderland and be a version of himself that will ultimately endear the players to him, get them to perform? And when you look at Sunderland, maybe he's looking at it as a stepping stone, really.
Yeah, you would think so. I think it's really interesting how he's actually effectively had his interview played out over the last six, seven months in terms of, as you say, how he's interacted with people and the softer side, even still has that edge to his personality and wit. So I think if he hadn't have done that, he wouldn't even be speculated for this job. And I think the reality is, if he's interviewed for it, he'd have to presume he's got some kind of guarantee that he has it. He's not going to interview for it and not get it. It'll be a case of whether he wants it and the budget's there or whatever to get them up. But, you know, I think, as David said, it's probably a club he could get a short-term success out of. Like, they're a big club to be in League One. Get them up. And potentially then he's back as a candidate for a bigger job, you know. It's fascinating, but I'd miss him as a pundit if he takes it. You know?
Yeah, but he'd probably still do World Cup and things like that. I mean, like, I don't think he'd disappear.
See, this is the kind of the whole point about it with Kane, is that we're talking about it as if, well, if he gets a job, but will we still get to see him on telly? Will we still get to listen to him? Will we still get to actually savour that enjoyment and the entertainment that he provides? Because that's what he does. He's literally the best pundit that Sky Sports have in terms of, if you want to watch it. Like, obviously, if you want to learn more about the game and what the intricacies of certain tactics, you watch Monday Night Football. You're not doing it for Roy Keane. Roy Keane is almost that little bit of an acerbic kind of tongue on him.
But he's compelling.
He's compelling. Yeah. But also, you can kind of cut through a lot of that because he gets to the point of also the basics and the fundamentals of it haven't changed. So, like, in terms of what players need to do, and that seems to be what Sunderland are looking for. But there's still that whole, maybe it could just be an Irish thing, but it does seem to be something that's happened a bit more in the UK over the last number of years, when he has been a lot more prominent now on Sky, where they are kind of beginning to kind of get a bit more of that. I said that word earlier, but it is that almost allure about him, where he kind of just draws you in, and it's sometimes more than just being, say, a football manager. But if this is what he wants to do, and it is want to get him back into being a manager, like, as Bernard was saying, like, he wouldn't have, basically the story has come out partly because, obviously, like, the club wanted to put the feelers out to see if fans wanted to welcome him back, how it would be received. Like, players in that dressing room, like, there was meetings with the director of football because they weren't happy that Johnson had been sacked, because there's still only a couple of points outside the automatic promotion places. So he'd be going into a dressing room that some might be excited to say, oh my God, this is Roy Keane. Others wouldn't care. Others would be like, the manager who's been picking me for the last number of months is gone. this fella who's been in the TV studio for the last number of years, absolutely slaughtering players, wanting to, what was he saying about David De Gea, won't let him back in the bus and would like murder him on the, because of certain mistakes. So like, some people be looking at, well, what if he's coming back, well, what's he going to do? Like, how is he going to actually, like, how does a Roy Keane team play? Because it's been so long since a Roy Keane has been the one making the decisions. He was a number two to Martin O'Neill. Like, I wonder if he was in the, having that conversation with the owners of Sunderland today, if he's saying, oh, well, I'll have my friend Martin, who's out of work at the moment, he can come in as my number two this time, roles reversed. I'd be very, very surprised if something like that happened. But it kind of, it's not that you get the sense that maybe Sunderland are using them because they're in too good a position to be looking at it as a kind of a publicity thing. But you just hope that they're doing it for the right reasons, that they actually say, this is a manager, this is a person who has something to offer. Not just in the short term, if that's where they're looking, and football is so short term in terms of results, if he can deliver those results instantly, then he might get an additional contract to stay in the club. But then you're looking at it, as I was saying earlier, you're into the more of life in the Championship, and it's that where Roy Keane wants to be, where he's been sitting pretty in a TV studio making a fair few bob, I'd imagine, in Sky, where he's literally having a serious voice on his football over there. And if football, not just being a pundit about it, but being a manager and a coach and all the rest of it, if that's where he sees his future, this is going to be a door back into it for him.
Well, I hope it happens anyway, because I think it'll be great. I'd love to see him back in that role again. And like, even as you pointed out there, David, what does a team managed by Roy Keane look like when it's out playing a game? Like, that in itself is fascinating. And
have he's actually learned that over the last number of years watching football, or in terms mm-hmm. of, has his actual thoughts in the game developed? Because we're saying, laughing about Instagram, but I suppose that does show some level of personal development that he'll allow his daughter set up on Instagram.
I hope he goes the Jose Mourinho way on Instagram and gives us lives and updates, and you know, we get a little bit more insight into him. But I'd be very surprised now if he'd bother with that. Right, it is a really busy day of sports, so we are going to park Roy Keane for a few minutes and turn our attention to rugby now. So a little bit earlier, Andy Farrell showed his hand, Bernard. We got to see his starting team for the Six Nations, and the only name on everyone's lips really is Mack Hansen. It had been suggested earlier in the week that he could end up starting, by all accounts, training his socks off, or whatever the phrase is. You'd know better than I would when someone is training really well, but seems to have earned his way into this team and now is starting in what will be the biggest game he's ever played in.
Yeah, it's incredible. He got brought in for a week in November, but I think a lot of that was driven by the fact that Australia were sniffing around him. They were over in the Northern Hemisphere, did a lot of injuries. Obviously, he's dual qualified. So effectively, from tomorrow, or from Saturday, he's tied to Ireland. It's a great story. I mean, he was an apprentice electrician. He drank in a pub in Brisbane, the same pub that Andy Friend's son drank in. They became friends. Turned out he had an Irish grandmother from Cork. The son told Friendy looked him up and gave him a contract. So, like, I think his performances have been beyond, I think, Connacht or Andy Friend's, you know, wildest dreams and expectations. It's gone incredibly well. He's a very exciting player. It is a big call by Farrell. So Farrell has said recently that he wants his wingers to be untidy, okay? So effectively unpredictable. And Hansen is that. He's not really your stereotypical...
Okay, break that down for us. So, like, so, just explain that to us, exactly what Andy Farrell means by that and what Mack Hansen brings to the game.
Yeah, he's unorthodox. He pops up in areas of the field that he's probably not supposed to. He comes looking for work, which is great, but also with the ball, he has this ability to break the first tackle, to get his hands free and keep the ball alive. It's very similar to James Lowe. He's different physically to James Lowe. He's not a left footer, but yet he has a lot of touches and a lot of offloads, and makes positive things happen around him. But he probably isn't the fastest winger in the world. He's probably not the greatest stepper. He's not the strongest, but yet somehow he manages to make yards and beat people. It's kind of it's very unusual. It's hard to put an exact finger on why he's so effective, but this season for Connacht he's been incredibly effective. Having said that, this is a completely different level. He's up against Luce Rhys-Amat, the Welsh flyer. He got sidestepped by Dan Sheehan in a game. They played Connacht against Leinster. It's the only bad defensive episode he's had so far this year, but that would worry you a little bit. So it's certainly not without risk, but it's a brave selection by Farrell. A lot of the other calls were probably par for the course, or certainly on form from November. With Henshaw and Earls having slight knocks, that allowed Hansen to come in. But as a lot of people thought, me included, that Ballatloon should have started, because he's been electric and he was ahead of Hansen in the pecking order. Having said that, Ballatloon's been playing right wing. He's gone for a specialist left winger, which, you know, you can see the logic in it.
So, like, would that not normally be the case? Would it be that he would go for the specialist on the different sides?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah, he would. Well, I thought he might put Conway across the left because he's more experienced. And also, we don't have a left footer now. So it's going to be tricky for Ireland, because Ireland were using James Lowe as a third kicker. So Gibson Park, Sexton, James Lowe, because he's a left footer. We've no left footer in the team. And Jake White, the Bulls coach, a former Springbok coach, used to say that the first guy he picked was his left footer and the second guy he picked was his second left footer. So it does change the whole perspective in terms of how we can kick. It'll put a lot more pressure on Sexton. But it is very exciting. Ball in hand, Hansen is box office.
Yeah, it really is. Okay, well, Andy Farrell was asked about him a little bit earlier when he faced the media, and here's what he had to say.
He's a smart rugby player. He makes things happen. He knows how to get himself involved in the game. He's got great feel. He's got a good skill set across the board. And it's tough when you first come into international camps, but the ones who do it best and hit the ground running and, you know, end up getting to a good few caps straight away, they're the guys that are able to be told once or maybe twice and pick things up straight away. And Mac's certainly done that.
So that was Andy Farrell there talking about Mac Hansen, who will make his Ireland debut this Saturday after being picked in Andy Farrell's starting side for the Wales game. It's been an interesting build-up. It's been a little bit different to the build-up in the past when Andy Farrell has been in charge, because there's been an awful lot of questions asked about what way the team are going to play, what Andy Farrell was trying to achieve. So it's been really calm and not a huge amount of discussion and debate until Mac Hansen today, which is quite interesting. Do you think the fact that it has been so calm, Bernard, that has allowed Andy Farrell to make a brave decision?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's got into this without the type of pressure he was going into November last year, Six Nations. So he'd be feeling good about himself. And that's a really good place to be for an Irish coach 2 years out from a World Cup, to be able to make decisions based on your good feeling, on your analysis, rather than the pressure of, I need to get a win here to save my job and to keep the public quiet. So it is a real positive from that point of view. I mean, there's some youngsters on the bench, James Hume, you know, Ryan Baird is coming through, Dan Sheen. So quite quickly, this team is starting to look a bit fresher. We still have the tried and tested, you know, the Johnny Sextons, the Tyke Furlongs, but with Kelleher coming through, with Porter on the loose, said with Josh Van der Fleer back in form, and, you know, Hugo Keenan, and said those bench players, there's a nice freshness to the squad. It's going to be fascinating. I mean, there's a lot of nonsense being talked about, you know, Wales are going to get smashed, and very disrespectful, actually, some Irish pundits about Wales, and it's certainly been picked up in Wales, and they're coming here going, well, look, we're the Six Nations champions. We've a better record in Ireland in the World Cup. We've a better record in Ireland in the Six Nations.
They've
we
also
deserve to be respected.
Six British and Irish Lions in their starting team as well.
Oh no, that team is decent. And so they have injuries for sure, but they're still capable of putting out a very strong team. The Six Nations is completely different than November. November, if we look at it objectively, New Zealand were wrecked. Argentina were running on fumes, and Japan were undercooked in terms of game time. So while lots of the things we did was really impressive, the Six Nations, bar the Italian game, is generally much tighter, much more competitive and more nerve-wracking.
So when we look at the championship as a whole, and the conversations around the likes of England and France are very much focused on the World Cup, where we still seem to be focused on the here and now and the Six Nations, and even the conversation about Johnny Sexton seems to have died down a little bit. Joey Carberry is named on the bench, which would make you think that when it comes to the 10, that Andy Farrell is looking ahead because Jack Carty isn't there.
Yeah, no, it's clear that the Carberry is number two. A lot of people are saying Jack Carty would be very disappointed. Of course he will, but at least he's now in the mix. He's back to third choice, right? So he's very close to getting an opportunity. And, you know, in November he was outside that completely. There was Billy Burns and Harry Byrne who were in ahead of him. So I think it's understandable that Farrell wants to have Carby on the bench this week. One, he covers fullback very well. Two, it's an opportunity to get 20 minutes into him at least, with an eye on France next week. You know, when you want to have players like Joey, who are covering a special position, being ready for Six Nations game time. And he may have to come on after 10 minutes. The good thing is his injury was an upper body injury, so he's been able to do a lot of running, and apparently he is very aerobically fit. So now the next step is getting a test at contact level.
I'm just wondering, I feel like that the character from Denzel Washington in Philadelphia, where he's saying, like, explain this like as if I'm a 6-year-old. But like you mentioned there about Wales being maybe disrespected, and there always seems to be a bit of hype when Ireland are going into a Six Nations. But where is this Ireland team at in terms of the development? Because you see, like, even listening, it seems like they are playing a bit more of an actual expansive style of play.
Yeah.
So where are they at the moment?
Well, we look like Stuart Barnes, who's a Sky pundit and writes for our Sunday Times, said Ireland are the best team in the world. I mean, like, based on what? South Africa, based on hard results, beating the Lions, World Cup champions, are the best team in the world. But there is that type of expectation. I think some of it, David, is coming from the fact that provinces are going so well, right? But that doesn't always transfer. Our province has always been very strong. Yet, you know, we've had seasons where we haven't performed in the Six Nations. Obviously, World Cups haven't gone well. So I genuinely feel that Saturday against Wales will give us a much better guide to where we are. As I said, we are playing good rugby. And there's lots of talent coming through. There's lots of power now. There's lots of athleticism. But we haven't played teams like England, France, Wales and Scotland, who will look to find ways of shutting us down. And then what do we do then? I mean, you know, you need to have variety in your game as well. So it's not just playing. It's no good if we play attractive rugby during Six Nations, but we don't get, you know, four wins. You know, is that progress? You know, so it's that balance between grinding out some games and then obviously when the space and opportunity is there to go on and put teams away.
The other point on that as well is the fact that if we do go and win a Six Nations, then the question will be asked, are we peaking too soon, which has happened in the past. So is it the case where it's trying to get that balance between winning the games and having the performances that at least look like they're heading where we want to go with the World Cup on the horizon?
Yeah, I think so. And also, you know, not being afraid to test players out. So as you said, France and England have found some real gems that will be a key part of their cycle for this World Cup and maybe the next one. We are now starting to do that. So that would be the ideal scenario, would be to win a championship, but not see development of a Ballacloon, of a Mac Hansen, of a Dan Sheen, you know, at the right time. And that's where we're going to get more depth. The Irish teams who've gone to World Cups have traditionally been your first choice 15 and then a big gap to the next crop, the next 15. And we've been very conservative in our selections. So I'd like to see is continue to do what he started by tomorrow, by, you know, taking a bit of a flyer, giving someone their first cap in a big game and seeing if they can sink or swim.
Yeah, no pressure on Mac Hansen then. So the other big call, or the one that has raised the most eyebrows, is the centre. So Bundee Aki is preferred over Robbie Henshaw to partner Gary Ringrose there, and Henshaw isn't included in the match day 23, which does seem a little bit strange.
Yeah, I think he clarified that earlier on, saying that Keith Earls and Robbie weren't 100%, and hence I think definitely Henshaw would have been on the bench, or one of the other would have been on the bench ahead of Hume, because Hume is very much a centre, and Robbie can play fullback. You know, we could have obviously Earls can play fullback, wing, centre. So I do believe that they actually are genuinely weren't 100%. Obviously we go to Paris the following Saturday, so I think that's precautionary more so than a form selection. Even though there's very little between Bundee, and Bundy's a very good player, we're not losing anything there. But I think probably Robbie might have got the nod if he was fully fit.
So Jemison Gibson-Park does take the number 9 with Sexton then taking the 10, and that pairing does seem to be working out, and again seems to be one that we will be heading into the future with, the very near future.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, at the way they want to play, it's about tempo, and Gibson Park certainly gets the ball away from the breakdown quicker than any other scrum half in Ireland. But it's not just that. He's not a Peter Stringer where it's just literally, you know, quick passes to 10. He snipes as well, and he threatens the defenders and puts people into space. So it's amazing. Like, he's not clear cut for Leinster, first choice. But it looked like his attributes are tailor-made for how Farrell wants to play. And if we continue to go down that route, he could be a key man for us.
So the front row must be very pleasing, Bernard, for you and for an awful lot of Irish rugby fans, with Andrew Porter, Ronan Kelleher and Tadhg Furlong. Just even seeing the three of them fit in together, like, that's exactly what you want.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I mean, I've done a piece for pre-match for RT about how good they are individually and collectively for Saturday. And just looking back through some clips over the last while, like, they're three power athletes. They're very good in the set piece. Their work rate's really high. Their defence is good. Their breakdown work is good. And the great thing is they play together week in, week out. So as a, you know, it's a big deal going into an international camp and scrummaging with a tight head you're not used to. Likewise, a loose head you're not used to. From a scrum point of view, seven of the forwards are Leinster, you know. So it's very, very easy from a line-out point of view and a scrum point of view to just get that cohesion. And that could be a key factor in if we are going to be successful.
So you mentioned the set pieces there. Is it fair to say now, after a bit of a shaky period, that they're reliable now in that area?
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly scrum. Line-out, stats would say that we're not where we need to be. Yes, we've managed to score some nice tries and have some nice intricate plays off line-out, which has been very intelligent and effective. So it's definitely something that can produce good ball. But I'd say Paul O'Connell would be looking for, you know, he'd be looking to get those stats up over the course of this this tournament, and, you know, really, really build some belief in our line-out. Our defensive line is very good. Our attacking line is just a little bit off, but they'll fix that.
You were mentioning earlier about Wales' injuries. Is this a game where they go for the throat early, or do they have to be patient?
No, I think we should go for it, yeah. I think that's the big thing at home. Crowd for the first time, in a Six Nations for a while. Ireland, as I said, have cohesion from so many Leinster players, confidence momentum from November and the provinces. I think they should really go after them now. Go after them mightn't run up a score, but it's just setting down that marker in terms of we're ready to play, we're confident, we believe in what we're doing. And make them question whether they're in a good place.
So Wales, as you mentioned, are a decent side, and they are, despite the criticism they're facing, an awful lot stronger, I think, than people expected. And when you see them on paper, and just even the fact that they do have six Lions as well going out, and the fact they're defending champions, we don't really know what's going on in the camp. It's easy just to speculate, as is often done. So where do you think they're going to cause problems for Ireland?
I think they've got very good halfbacks. Thomas Williams, Dan Biggar, are both excellent players. It's going to be really interesting. Josh Adams could be a strength for them. He's moved to 13. He's a phenomenal winger, but also he could be a weakness because he's getting exposed. He's getting to play 13 at a level which is the top level where he should be getting experience playing in the URC. So he's only played 3 or 4 games, I think, at 13 in his life. I think the weakness for the strength is their back row. So Basham, Wainwright, Ellis Jenkins are really nicely balanced back row. I think the area we look to target them is their front five. Even though they've Adam Beard, I'm not sure Will Rowlands is a top end international lock. Ryan Elias wouldn't be as good as Ken Owens. Tom Francis his form isn't as good as it used to be when he was in Exeter Chiefs. And then Wynn Jones is obviously British and Irish line, but I just think collectively our front five will have to do a number on him.
So let's quickly move on to the other two games as well. So France and Italy, look, I think everybody at this stage knows that France have been building along nicely, and you'd imagine that it'll be pretty straightforward for them against Italy.
Absolutely, yeah. Unfortunately, look at Benetton are back competitive again, which is good. And always Italy, they generally play better against France than doing against anybody else. They've actually beaten them a few times, but this French team looked to be in a really good trajectory towards a home World Cup. We'll get great confidence from beating the All Blacks, and yeah, it's nearly impossible to see that game being close.
Do you think the same is going to be the case in the England-Scotland game? Just a lot of questions still about Eddie Jones and whether he will be able to transform England like he seems to want to.
Yeah, he's done it lots of times. He's the most experienced World Cup coach, and he feels that this is the time to change. If you're not sure about players, where they're going to be in 2 years out from the World Cup, change them now. He's got a brilliant 10, Marcus Smith from Harlequins, who could be the next world star. He obviously ideally would have liked to play Owen Farrell alongside him at 12 as a kind of a guardian angel or a mentor, but he's out. But when you look at what England can put on the pitch, there's quite a lot of talent there. But having said that, the Scotland team really rate themselves, and there's genuine reason why they should, which hasn't always been the case. They have been building quite nicely. The two districts are, Glasgow and Edinburgh, are more competitive than ever, and they had a very positive November, and there's some real talented players in there. They've just brought back in Johnny Gray, who back in the team, Stuart Hogg, Finn Russell, etc. So that game is going to be, that could be a classic.
So give me your three predictions for the three games, please.
Ireland by 6, Scotland by 2, and France by 30.
Right. Bernard Jackman, thank you so much. But stay with me for a minute, because I want to tell you and all the listeners about our Aldi competition. So for anyone who's tuning in for the first time this week, thanks to Aldi, we want to send you to the most romantic city in the world, Paris, to see the Irish team take on France in the Guinness Six Nations at the Stade de France on Saturday, February 12th. We've got return flights, a three-night hotel stay, and tickets to the big game. It doesn't get better than that. It's all to celebrate all Aldi's 149 stores having everything that you need for Valentine's. So to begin with the chance to win this amazing prize, have a listen to this clip and answer the following question.
There for Stringer. Gathered in, but picked up by O'Driscoll. Here he goes again. Brian O'Driscoll is in for a magnificent hat-trick. What a try by Brian O'Driscoll. And Ireland are right back in it with 7 minutes to go. Brilliant play by the Blackhawks centre. His hat-trick.
So the question is, in what city did Brian O'Driscoll score this hat-trick of tries? Text your answer and name to 51552. We'll pick one correct answer randomly, and that person will get themselves a €50 Aldi gift card and a place in tomorrow's draw for the trip to Paris. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie. Over 18s only, and you've got to be able to travel on the 11th of February. Good luck, everyone. Time for a very quick break, and then we're back with Neil Ewing looking ahead to this weekend's Gaelic football action. 2FM.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. It is Thursday. David Snaid is with me in studio, and we are now going to look ahead to this weekend's Gaelic football action. I think we're still salivating over the opening weekend of the football last weekend, and still so much to look forward to for many reasons. And to talk us through it all, I'm delighted to say that former Sligo footballer Neil Ewing is with me on the line. Neil, I always thought that Kerry and Dublin in round two was going to be an intriguing encounter. I didn't realise maybe a month or so ago how much it would feel like there was a lot riding on it. It just feels like such a huge game, and not just for Dublin, but it feels important for Kerry too.
Hi Marie, hi David. Yeah, absolutely. I think for both teams, this game has taken on a really added significance based on last week's results, or probably last week's performances more so than last week's results. You know, we spoke last week, we were all looking forward to an exciting weekend of football, but I don't think we could have imagined what we'd see on Saturday. And I know myself, I thought the Dubs had been written off too quickly, but I think Saturday evening's performance had everybody scratching their heads. And similarly then on Sunday, I think everybody would have fancied Kerry to go up to Newbridge and come down the road with 2 points in Jack O'Connor's first game, but it just didn't work out for them after a strong first half. Second half, Kildare came right back at them, and Kerry were probably lucky to leave with a point, but it's definitely added huge significance to this weekend's games. And I think probably significance in terms of public perception as much as what will be happening inside the camps themselves. I think, you know, for Dublin, probably people are, there's a strong elements of people hoping that Dublin are on the way down, and, you know, another defeat this weekend, two in a row, would really feed into that theory and give people a lot to talk about. And for Kerry, similarly with a management change, you know, it was probably done in quite controversial circumstances, how Peter Keane was moved on. You know, some murmurings the players would have liked to see him stay on. So, you know, was a management change required? If they start the league with two defeats, again, I think there'll be a lot of talk, especially in such a football county like Kerry with such a passionate support, and especially with new faces like Paddy Talley in there from Down, who'd probably traditionally be a more defensive coach. I think a lot of questions could start to be asked around Kerry if they were to only have 1 point on the board after two games.
Yeah, and I think it's the calibre of players really as well that they have down there, and the expectation that comes with it, and also the fact that people know that when you have that group of players, you're not going to have them forever. And central to that is David Clifford. And anyone that's been following his exploits in the Sigerson over the last couple of weeks knows how much form he's going to bring into the game if he does play. He has been obviously out quite a lot over the last while. But if he does go up against Dublin, how are they going to handle him?
Yeah, I suppose probably 7 days ago you would have said, you know, Dublin will come up with a way to counteract David Clifford or to minimise his impact on the game. We seen last week the damage that Ryan O'Neill was able to do inside in that Dublin full back line. You know, probably if you're one of them members of the Dublin full back line, the last person you want to see coming this week is David Clifford. But I think, you know, Davy Byrne probably got a little bit of slack last week for how he handled Ryan O'Neill. But I think the big thing that Dublin had over the years, and, you know, it probably went in under the radar in the last week, analysing their performance or the performance of their defence, was that they were always so dominant around midfield or, you know, in that middle third. And, you know, if you're winning ball in midfield or you're strong on your own kickouts, you know, Dublin, for so long, their retention rate was so high. You know, it's an extra attack for the opposition, every ball that you lose there around the middle. And, you know, I think that definitely played into the struggles their full back line had last week. Even Armagh just maybe had an extra second or two for each of those attacks as well, maybe to pick out the ideal pass that they wanted. Or there was runners coming forward on the front foot, you know, from breaks they won around the middle, as opposed to teams maybe over the years, any possession they had was maybe from a short kick out they got away themselves against Dublin, and they're having to work it 70, 80 yards up the pitch and, you know, on the back foot. But, you know, Armagh were winning ball in that middle third and opening up Dublin at the back before they had a chance to get set up or to put some pressure on the kickers out the pitch. So, you know, I'd look at that a lot more than Dublin just struggling in the full back line. I think there's still some strong defenders back there, but, you know, probably just Dublin's dominance around the middle was giving Armagh maybe, you know, 50% more attacks than any team would have had against Dublin over the years.
So a lot of speculation that Owen Merchant could possibly be injured, but that James McCarthy and Conor Callaghan could make a return. So he'll definitely be keeping an eye on the team news over the next couple of days. Mayo have released a team for their match against Monaghan, though, and a very familiar face and a welcome one will be Lee Keegan returning to the starting lineup.
Yeah, Lee Keegan, an amazing player for Mayo over the years. And, you know, some of the other guys that, you know, he probably came into the team with, I remember played a kind of final against Lee Keegan's Mayo team in 2009, and even Kevin McLaughlin, Donny Vaughan, some of those players came off that team. But, you know, Lee has probably went while some of that other vintage have stepped away from the scene. Lee has been able to keep his standards up incredibly high, and you know, I think for a Mayo team who were already probably have a little bit of momentum after a strong comeback with 14 men last week, for a difficult assignment up in Clonus, you know, to have Lee Keegan back and building towards another season, both for himself personally and for Mayo, is huge. And yeah, I think they're probably going to need everyone they have heading up to Clonus, because again, Monaghan just showed you just how admirable a team they are. You know, they really are a benchmark for every county in the country in terms of what can be achieved off small playing numbers, you know, a relatively small number of clubs in Monaghan. But, you know, they're consistently one of the top 10, if not top 8 teams in the country. And nobody enjoys a trip up to Clonus, and that's going to be a proper battle for Mayo. And I suppose with the way the results played out last again, both of them, they have 1 point on the board. But, you know, for Monaghan especially, you know, if they lose that home game, you know, they're looking at, you know, Dublin and Kerry still to play. maybe needing 3 wins from the remaining games to guarantee survival. It's not a position they want to find themselves in, so they'll definitely be targeting that Mayo game. You know, for Mayo, probably the league doesn't have the same importance as it does for Monaghan. Over the last 2 seasons, Mayo have been able to show they've, well, came from Division 2 last year to an All-Ireland final. On the back of a relegation the year before, they ended up in an All-Ireland final also. So, you know, Mayo have that self-belief to know that, you know, league results aren't terminal, whereas for other counties who are looking to make that step up, the likes of Monaghan, they want to preserve that Division 1 status heading into a tough Ulster Championship.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it's going to be so competitive over the next few months. Neil Ewing, thank you so much for joining us. So many great games to look forward to this weekend. We're going to take a very quick break, and then David will be joined on the line by Gary Dicker to go through how his career is going.
2FM. Game on 2FM. With Green Farm, being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty. 2.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. David Snaid, journalist, is with me in studio, and I'm delighted to say that we are joined now on the line by former Irish under-21 international Gary Dicker, who is now coach of the Brighton under-18s, but has just retired from being a player manager with the 23s. Am I putting that right, Gary?
Player coach.
Gary, before we get into your career, we were talking at the top of the show about Roy Keane and potentially returning to Sunderland. Give us your views.
I'm all for it, to be honest with you. I think it's probably the level you probably have to go back in at. And the size of the club will help him going in at that level, because he's not been in the game for a long time on managing in the game. I know he's in the Ireland set up, so I think he's probably learnt a lot from his time out, and why not? I think you see the list of managers that usually go around the block usually at that level. They probably haven't done as well as Roy's done when he was at Sunderland as well.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting, that's for sure. So look, you've just finished up as player coach with the club's under-23s, and any time I read about this or I see this, I find it absolutely fascinating. So you're obviously, you know, not under 23, you're in your 30s and you're playing with all these young lads. What's it like?
For me, it wasn't too unfamiliar. The game's getting younger every year. You look at squads across all the leagues, even though I was playing with 17-year-olds most years. So it was a role that Brighton actually probably started off in the Premier League. They got the idea when they played against Bayern Munich, and they noticed the fella playing that obviously wasn't under 23, and they got speaking to Bayern Munich about it and seeing how well it worked with them, and they decided to start it the last few years with the current under 23 manager, Andrew Copps, who I played with. So it just kind of started from there, and they've done it ever since. It's a role I really enjoyed. I played and trained as much as I could to try and help the young lads. I took sessions here and there, but it was more so just to try help them along and set standards and help them along the way.
Gary, how are you? It's David Snaid.
David, how are you?
How's it going? Just obviously a bit of a disclaimer here. I remember just prior to COVID, obviously we spent that weekend together when you were still playing at Kilmarnock, and it was kind of just a fascinating insight from my point of view to see what kind of drives someone to live away from their wife and kids and keep going at that age. And clearly what shone through for me when I spent that time with you was just that, maybe that love of the game that you still had. Is that what's driving you into this next part with coaching in terms of passing on what you have learned down through the years?
Yeah, definitely. I wasn't frightened of retiring, if that's the word, which it can be. I was prepared as best as I could with doing my badges, helping out with Kilmarnock's reserves up there as well. So I kind of dipped my toe in it and done as much as I could while I was playing. The transition then to the job I was doing with the 23s was perfect. I always said I didn't want football to retire me in a way. I always wanted to go out on my own terms, Physically, I feel fine. Mentally, it's always a bit more draining, but the role I was in wasn't as much. And it kind of slowly drifted into me, really. And to get the chance to work at a Premier League club with some of the best talents probably in the country and outside the country now, just was an opportunity I couldn't turn down.
And like you were that brilliant when you were playing the Witt team, when they hadn't got that huge academy that's there now and the millions that have pumped into it. Like, Brighton was a very, very different club when you were playing there. Just kind of just give an example or kind of just describe just the transformation that has taken place there.
Yeah, it was in a bit of a sticky situation when I came. We were struggling. They were still playing at Witt Dean, which is an athletics track that had which had one stand, and the rest were kind of portable stands, made up stands with scaffolding. The away section was so far away you couldn't even see the game. There's no shelter on three quarters of the ground, but it was a club that it was in the meantime of trying to gear up for the next stage. The chairman had just come in, Tony Bloom, and straight away, you knew straight away with the stadium was just about starting to get built, and you could see the change then and the vision that the club's had. And it's a big credit to the club and to the chairman, to be honest with you, to push through with that vision and lay down the foundations. Usually what will happen was you'll see clubs now, that big clubs that don't have good training grounds, the infrastructure, everything that is done at the club is a credit. And also the fans, to be fair, they've suffered a lot. They played at Gillingham for a few years before that. They're not over the place. So to see now the facilities in the stadium, it's second to none.
There seems to be a really strong Irish basis there as well, and a really good connection between the academy and just the young Irish players that seem to head over there.
Yeah, I think they call it Mini Ireland over here. John Morland is the academy manager here, also worked with the FAI. He's not actually Irish, even though everyone thinks he is.
Well, we'll claim him. We'll claim him by this stage.
We'll claim him. He actually worked with the FAI, with Brian Kerr, when he first went involved. And he's obviously always kept an eye on the Irish talent. He's always liked the mentality, and like most people, he knows just talent in the country, and he's willing to give them a chance. And he's brought over a good few players, probably from Ireland and from everywhere. But now we've got a strong Irish connection there, and we've got some very good Irish players, English-based players, and foreign players here as well. And it's a credit to the club. But no, we've got a strong Irish connection, and a good few of them have done really well this season. The first time I've really seen them, and you can see the talent that's going to be coming through in our next few years is really exciting.
Like there is, there's like a lot of excitement at the moment, obviously, around Evan Ferguson, and you see the impact that he's made. Obviously, you would have worked with him, you would have played alongside him, and you see him now, he's in and around that first team environment. Like, are we right to be a little bit excited by what could come there? And from your point of view, if you are working with these younger lads now, what is it that these young lads want from a coach? What are they seeking in terms of the level of detail and what they want from you?
Listen, the game has changed an awful lot. There's a lot more information you can get now. Every training session's video, you've got stats and data on everything. It's just, honestly, it's given them a platform. Us as coaches, we can do so much, but at the end of the day, it's always down to the player and what they take on board and how they go about it, to be honest with you. Touching on Evan, he's a brilliant lad. You wouldn't have known he's made his debut at 17 and he's been playing on the bench in Premier League games. He's still the same guy he sees. So it's a credit to him, but listen, at that age, you are fearless. You just want to play football. And it's a great environment that they have at Brighton, to be honest with you. How they treat people, how they look after people off the pitch. And it's really smart and clever how they do stuff. They'll never throw someone in if they're not ready, if they're not good enough. And he is, to be honest, at the moment. He's playing really well. And he's been up with the first team for a good bit. And it's only it's only good for us having young players in the team and for Ireland as well. The more we can get through, it's probably an area that we've lacked in the last few years. But I think it's just being patient as well. I think that's the key word with young players. To happen overnight. He's 17, and listen, if he doesn't play for Ireland until he's 21 or 22, that's nothing to worry about, because sometimes it takes a little bit longer with players to mature. But the way he's going, he's going in the right direction.
And it's maybe a bit of an interesting one, but drawing a parallel, like, he's at the start of what will hopefully a very promising playing career. His aim is the Premier League and Ireland. You're now kind of at the start of what you will hope will be a very promising coaching career. Like, we were touching on Roy Keane there, like, I was going through, I think he could have been the last Republic of Ireland born Irish manager in the Premier League. Like, is that a name for you? Is that where you're looking at? Is that a target? And you talk about Brighton and the kind of platform that can give. Is it a club where you feel, you know what, bit by bit, work through the ranks, that could be an attainable goal for you?
Yeah, definitely. Listen, it's like every, as a player, it was always your ambition. I didn't get to the Premier League. As a player, I got to the Championship, and the name where definitely where you want to be, but it's a long and steady road. A bit more relaxing probably and learning the ropes a little bit more than when you're starting out as a player. You can make more mistakes starting off in the job, and I think you've got to earn your crust really and start from the bottom and work your way up. And I couldn't think of a better club to be honest with you. How it's structured, as I talk about, from top to bottom, the experience and the good coaches we have here, and the integration between us, the 23s, the first team, everybody. There's no us and them at the club, and it's brilliant to integrate the first team staff, for them to have an interest in games. You have the first team players coming out to watch games. We played in the U Cup, you had the likes of Lallana, Shane Duffy coming over and watching, and it's a credit to the culture that's really at the club and the feel that they have about the place, and that can happen overnight. Put on John Moore, and it's probably 10 years of hard work behind the scenes between himself, Ian Buckman, Dan Ashwood, Paul Barber, the chairman, and then you've also got the manager and staff in the first team that are willing to give young players a chance as well. So right now it's a brilliant place to be for me, and I just want to learn as much as I can and see where it takes me.
Sounds like you're definitely on the right track. Anyway, Gary Dicker, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time, and we look forward to following your career as well. David Snaith, thank you very much for coming into studio alongside me for the whole hour. We did have an Aldi competition a little bit earlier on. Well, the winner is Louise Mullins from Kilkenny City. So she gets that €50 gift card and into tomorrow's draw for that trip to Paris. So do stay tuned tomorrow to find out who'll win the overall prize. It is an absolute cracker. Well, that is all we have time for now. Tara Kumar is up next. 2FM.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm, being flat to the mat isn't real. Our protein is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.